Welcome back to another Thursday on the Damage Report. I am Rayvana, filling in for the last time for John Idarola. I just want to say it's been wonderful filling in for him while he's been away. I know he's been back, but this is my last time filling in for a while. So I want to just say thank you to all the producers and everybody working behind the scenes who's made this so wonderful. And also to you, the audience, who's been so, so kind to me. And I also want to say thank you to Jackson White for joining me today to talk about some really fun stories that I think we're going to have a good time with.
Oh yeah, yeah. After I checked out what it is that we're running down, I was like, oh yeah, me and Ray are gonna have a good time. And look at this. It is a silky smooth Thursday.
Right.
I was complimenting. I was like, look at how smooth and fresh Ray's shirt is, whether it's velvet, I don't know what it is, but it's playing, it's smooth. And then I got this thing on, you feel me? So it's always a good combination when me and Ray get together in whatever medium, you know?
Absolutely. But what wasn't a good combination was everyone who got together last night at the third Republican debate. So how about we jump into this?
Let's do it.
Think about who's moderating this debate. This should be Tucker Carlson, Joe Rogan, and Elon Musk. We'd have 10 times the viewership asking questions that GOP primary voters actually care about and bringing more people into our party. You think the Democrats, and we've got Kristen Welker here, you think the Democrats would actually hire Greg Gutfeld to host a Democratic debate?
Last night was the third Republican primary debate, and that was just a small taste of Vivek Ramaswamy, who came out the gate, if you were watching, super aggressive last night. Now, there's only 67 days left until the Iowa caucus, and five of the candidates participated in the debate. Trump, of course, didn't go. He's still protesting them. But what he did do was hold a rally nearby. DeSantis and Chris Christie attacked him for that.
He owes it to you to be on this stage and explain why he should get another chance. He should explain why he didn't have Mexico pay for the border wall. He should explain why he racked up so much debt. He should explain why he didn't drain the swamp. And he said Republicans were going to get tired of winning. Well, we saw last night, I'm sick of Republicans losing.
I'll say this about Donald Trump. Anybody who's going to be spending the next year and a half of their life focusing on keeping themselves out of jail and courtrooms cannot lead this party or this country. Right, and it needs to be said plainly.
It's funny that he said he's sick of Republicans losing, and we're going to get into in a second why it's ridiculous considering they're doubling and tripling down on the very things that are making the Republicans lose. But Jackson, I understand why Trump isn't going to these debates, right? I understand why they need to attack him for it, but at the same time, he's almost, you know, in every way possible, already assured that he's going to be the candidate. Why bother giving these other people the legitimacy, right? Giving DeSantis, giving Chris Christie, who are not going to be the candidate. Let's just be honest. They're not going to be the candidate in this upcoming election. Giving them the legitimacy. And I'm not saying that I want Trump to be the candidate. Yeah. But if we're looking at this objectively, that's what's going to happen.
Well, you know, I was chuckling like before you said that, because, you know, it's like, you know, Donald Trump's making the pragmatic decision. Doesn't really matter if he shows up to the debates, but he's going to show up to the trials that he doesn't have to be at and step right outside and run his mouth about the judges and the prosecutors, you know, when he could just, you know. So Donald Trump, you know, picks and chooses. He accidentally acts practically from time to time. I think I saw some footage of him at one of his rallies he just had. And it was like,
you know, they want me at the debates, but I'm at a rally right now and there's in front of 10,000 people. And that's a lot harder than it is to show up to a debate, you know.
And like he just started like congratulating himself. And but you're right. I mean, it's a done deal for him in the Republican primary. And in fact, his polling continues to rise in the general and in the primary. Right now, polling in the primary is more important. But I mean, it's over. It's been over.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because if you look at the more head-to-head Trump versus Biden versus, let's say, Nikki Haley versus Biden, or any Republican who's still in the race, who hasn't dropped out, as we've seen some of them do already, versus Biden. They poll a lot better than Donald Trump, but this just goes to show the total capture that Donald Trump has of the Republican Party. And I've talked about this time and time again, but I just can't help but think of ahead of the 2020 election at the RNC, at their convention, what were they saying, right? That their entire platform is gonna be whatever Trump says it is. That's usually when the Republican Party would announce the main policy points they wanna stick to in the upcoming election and the upcoming years, what they're advocating for, but they didn't. They just said, whatever Trump says goes. And it's been that way, right? It's continued to be that way for the party. And it's really going to harm them because, let's say Nikki Haley runs against Biden. She beats him handedly, clearly a front runner against Joe Biden. Not that I would want that to happen, I want to be clear, but just looking at this electorally, Trump, it's a lot closer of a race, but they can't go against him because of the stranglehold he has on the party.
And I think what's most important about that, and you know, you kind of setting up a scenario where Biden will be going against someone like Nikki Haley is, you know, we're still a year out from the election, but the closer we get to the election, the more people pay attention and the more people start to really weigh things out. And Donald Trump is just in a terrible position. He just is. He's already been found liable of fraud. And he can't shut his mouth and he can't stop making things worse for himself. So whatever happens with this civil case is going to continue to drive him out of his mind. 91 federal charges. He's not going to beat all of them. The list goes on and on. Nikki Haley has none of that to worry about. You know what I'm saying? Like there's none of this stuff that's up in the air. Like, you know, maybe she'll be in prison. And people, again, aren't going to have to actually consider these things. Nikki Haley could put together a competent campaign. Donald Trump, look at his lawyer and attorney situation. Nobody wants to work with him, on top of the fact that he doesn't pay people anyway. So when it's time to put together a general election campaign, you know, the polls can say what they say now, but if everyone who works on his campaign sucks, which is what it's looking like, it'll be another story. So yeah, Nikki Haley would absolutely be a better bet, but Trump took over the party, so it's over.
Just speaking of the ways in which it seems like the Republican Party wants to lose, let's talk about how they did lose massively on Tuesday. And that was because abortion was on the ballot in several key states and in a few ways, shapes and forms, right? In Ohio, it was, you know, clearly on the ballot. And then when you look at Kentucky as well as Virginia, it was on the ballot in that if they lost the gubernatorial race in Kentucky, they would be able to pass extremely regressive abortion bans. And if they lost the Senate in Virginia, the same thing would happen. But it's clear that at least these candidates, and we'll get into a little bit later, other key players in the Republican Party haven't learned their lesson on abortion, because most of the candidates on the debate stage doubled down on their positions to have some sort of abortion ban.
You got to do a better job on these referenda. I think of all the stuff that's happened to the pro-life cause, they have been caught flat-footed on these referenda, and they have been losing the referenda. A lot of the people who are voting for the referenda are Republicans who would vote for a Republican candidate. So you got to understand how to do that. But let's just be clear. The Democrats have taken a position. They will not identify the point at which there should be any protection all the way up until birth. That is wrong, and we cannot stand for that.
Let's make sure we make contraception accessible. Let's make sure that none of these state laws put a woman in jail or give her the death penalty for getting an abortion. Let's focus on how to save as many babies as we can.
Speaking as a man, they say men have trouble speaking on this issue. I don't think we need to be that way. It was my home state of Ohio, I'm upset about this yesterday, that passed a constitutional amendment that now effectively codifies a right to abortion all the way up to the time of birth without parental consent. Why? It's back to that Republican culture of losing.
I'm sorry. I knew I was going to break down laughing when I heard him say it again. The idea that men have had any reservations on speaking on women's bodies. It's so patently absurd. If you look at the makeup of the legislators passing these extremely regressive abortion bans, these extremely fascistic abortion bans, they are almost majority men voting to pass these pieces of legislation. Like, shut the hell up, dude. Speaking as a man who's, you know, quite oppressed when it comes to the topic of asserting dominance over a woman's body, just absolutely absurd. And Speaking of absurd, Chris Christie was the only candidate that actually went further and called out a little bit the pro-life movement.
Here's the bigger issue, Kirsten. The bigger issue is, and Tim began to touch on this, we're not pro-life for the whole life. To be pro-life for the whole life means that the life of a 16-year-old drug addict on the floor of the county lockup is precious and we should get treatment for her to restore her life. The 52-year-old who's drug addicted should make sure that any of his children who he's passed that addiction on to are treated well too. Pro-life's not just in the womb, Kirsten, it's for the whole life.
But we know, right, Jackson, that pro-life doesn't actually mean pro-life, right? It means pro-forced birth. It is just mostly men attempting to exert power over women's bodies, to control women. It has nothing to do with them caring about the so-called sanctity of life, because as Chris Christie just said, it doesn't extend beyond the womb. It ends the second that the fetus is born, and then whatever happens, to hell with it, right? We're not going to provide any resources for parents. We're not going to provide any housing or food assistance programs. We're going to make education as bad as possible. We're going to do that. And then we're going to criminalize so many things that and create this school to prison pipeline in so many cases because we just don't care about life. But to that point, it's unpopular, right? We talked about this, you and I got to talk about this a little bit yesterday. It is severely unpopular. So even if Chris Christie's message was true to what pro-life is supposed to mean, or in an idyllic world, what it should mean from whenever they believe that it has a life until death, right? But it doesn't mean that, because as long as you're arguing against abortion protections, you're going to be holding an unpopular position, and it's going to continue to drive people to the polls against you.
Yeah, because, you know, this is an issue that people can't really choose to ignore, because at the end of the day, we're human beings are very sexually active. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's a part of our lives. And women and men, because this impacts both of us, you know what I'm saying? Like, bringing a child into the world impacts, obviously, it's heavier on the woman overall, but this impacts society in general. So taking away the option for people to, you know, bring children into the world in a more planned fashion, it's just a reflection of an idea in your head that we're really saving children. Like, you really think that it's just ideology. So much of the point where I saw Chris Christie, he was on MSNBC. He was talking to Mika Brzezinski, and she made him stand on when he was saying, well, you know, in New Jersey, women, it's technically legal to get an abortion at 9 months if it's like, you know, something like severely wrong. And Mika was like, but this doesn't happen. Like, this is like such a low percentage. And he was like, I didn't say it happens. I said it can happen. Ultimately, I think what these Republicans don't realize, it seems that this is an issue to people who were alive when Roe v. Wade happened and who were mad about it. Like, this old issue that they just need to give up, that even younger Republicans aren't on board with. You know, it's really extreme for these 6 week positions. It just is. And this old generation is really helping to destroy the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we're going to talk in a little bit about how they can't reflect on their electoral losses. They're not like licking their wounds. They're just pretending it didn't happen entirely and refusing to acknowledge that the abortion issue drives people to the polls. And we'll get into more of that later. So I'll save what I was going to say for that discussion. But let's move on to something else that was discussed at the debate. And that is the what I'm going to call a genocide happening in Gaza that Israel is carrying out in Gaza. So they did discuss foreign policy. They were asked about the war. And here's what they said, starting with Ron DeSantis.
As president of the United States, what would you be urging Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to do at this moment? Governor DeSantis.
I would be telling Bibi, finish the job once and for all with these butchers, Hamas. They're terrorists. They're massacring innocent people. They would wipe every Jew off the globe if they could. He cannot live with that threat right by his country. The Hamas should release every hostage, and they should unconditionally surrender. I'm sick of hearing the media. I'm sick of hearing other people blame Israel just for defending itself.
I'm going to let Ron DeSantis in on a little secret. Benjamin Netanyahu is never going to eliminate Hamas because he loves that Hamas exists. In fact, in 2019, while speaking to members of the Likud party in the Knesset, he said, "It must be the policy of Israel that we continue to bolster and fund Hamas to thwart the establishment of a Palestinian state." Hamas doesn't exist in spite of Israel. It exists because of Israel, and not just in an abstract way, not just that they created the conditions that allow terrorism to thrive, but in that they literally give Hamas money so that more secular liberation movements inside of Gaza don't thrive, so that they can always justify their horrific acts of violence by saying, well, we're fighting against terrorism, we have to root out terrorism. But they didn't have to root out terrorism when they were literally transferring funds to Hamas. It is an absurd claim. And of course, you're never going to hear the truth of the matter if you're watching the Republican primary debate. But speaking of that, let's let some of the other candidates tell you their position. Nikki Haley doubled down on her statement from months ago that America needs Israel, not the other way around.
Last thing we need to do is to tell Israel what to do. The only thing we should be doing is supporting them and eliminating Hamas. It is not that Israel needs America. America needs Israel. They are the tip of the spear when it comes to this Islamic terrorism, and we need to make sure that we have their backs in that process.
Well, let's just do a little fact check on who needs who from US News. The United States has given Israel more than $260 billion in combined military and economic aid since World War II, plus about $10 billion more in contributions for missile defense systems like the Iron Dome, a US News analysis finds. That's the most granted to any country throughout that time frame, and around $100 billion more than Egypt, the second highest recipient historically. Obviously, didn't expect any salient takes from the Republican primary candidates on on what's going on in Gaza. I mean, someone like Ron DeSantis, who has said we need to shut down all immigration of Palestinian people into the United States, that, you know, we should deport Palestinian American citizens. But before I get to who won the debate, Jackson, I just want to let you get your take on what they said there.
Well, I mean, you know, you don't really have to be like super educated on the history of that region of the world. Mm-hmm. You can just look at how they responded and see that they were given knee-jerk, inauthentic reactions. Because when you just look at the numbers, even if you just look at what's been going on over the last, you know, month or so, look at look at how many more deaths are on the Palestinian side. Even before that. Look at how much more aid and alliances to powerful countries and weapons that Israel has compared to anybody within any Palestinian regions. Mm-hmm. Look at how strong and look at how much leverage Israel has over so many different government factions. You know, you look at that and it's like, oh, well, there's nothing to talk about. We just got to get rid of Hamas because they're such a threat. You know, obviously nobody who's in a sound mind would support innocent people getting killed. But at this point, that's really beyond the point, because look at how many more Palestinians have died. So to not consider that, again, you can just see, oh, they don't even have any real feelings for it. Then you look at the numbers, how much money AIPAC gives. Yeah. And you just look at the history and look at how our government, especially our federal system, works. Look at people who get fired for, you know, saying, hey, maybe we should defend the Palestinians, stand up for them some way. It's just it's very political and money well spent in terms of it being effective to put Israel in a position to where they can kind of do what they'd like.
Mm-hmm. And AIPAC is making investments on both sides of the aisles. They're funding Democrats and Republicans alike. But speaking of Republicans, let's talk about who apparently won the debate. So here is a poll from 538. Apparently, DeSantis won, first win for him after a couple really bad debates. Can you put the camera back on me for a second? I think it was this that really won the audience over. That time, or it was the smile, the award-winning smile of Ron DeSantis.
I didn't see the debates last night, but now we have to see this now, or as soon as the show's over, I'm looking it up. So you made me look up somebody's. Oh, Marjorie Taylor Greene's feet. Yeah, you. So now we're about to look this up. Yeah.
He was biting his tongue and his lip a little bit, and I was like, DeSantis, are you trying to look sexy?
Maybe he was. He stuck his tongue out at some interview. So
yeah, it's creepy and gross, and he's the worst. Very, very not authentically human. But just to pull up that really quick, Chris Christie apparently did the worst. Haley did second best. She's been slowly gaining in the polls with moderates. Ramaswamy and third. And if you would believe it, Doug Burgum was there.
Really?
Doug Burgum's just holding on by the skin of his teeth, still somehow getting on the debate stage every time.
I forgot about him.
It's astounding to me. Everyone forgot about him. If for everyone who didn't immediately go, who, when they announced his name, yeah, everyone else had forgot about him. Yeah. Okay. All right. With that, we got to go to our first break, but stick around because we're going to be talking about the Ivanka Trump testifying in the civil case in New York coming up after this. Okay. With that, we're back. Ravana and Jackson White on the damage report. Let's jump right into this next story because we've been covering this trial for weeks now since it started, and the failed children of Donald Trump are having to take the stand. Next up on the chopping block was Ivanka. Was Ivanka Trump being heckled as she headed into Engoron's courtroom to testify in the New York civil trial. Now, in her testimony, she, like her brothers, claimed that she did not know many details related to the financial documents that are at the center of this case. Now, this is something that Attorney General Letitia James predicted and discounted ahead of her testimony.
Ivanka Trump secured, negotiated loans to obtain favorable terms based on fraudulent statements of financial condition. And she will attempt today to distance herself from the company. But unfortunately, the facts will reveal that in fact that she was very much involved. We uncovered the scheme and she benefited from it personally. Ms. Trump will do all that she can to try to separate herself from this corporation, but she's inextricably tied to the Trump organization.
She, as her brothers, are also tied to the Trump organization, as the attorney general just laid out there. A little bit more from NBC News. Ivanka Trump was asked a number of questions about how loans were secured, about emails that went back and forth between her and different members of loan organizations. And she repeatedly politely said, "I do not recall." That has been the line for at least her and Eric, was "I don't remember." That was the strategy of Don Jr. was just to blatantly lie on the stand. Now I would say that they're probably also lying. I'm sure that they have some memory of these events. Don Jr., on the other hand, considering how much cocaine he does, might not have a strong memory of these events.
Yeah.
But under cross-examination, Ivanka Trump doubled down on her earlier assertions that she had nothing to do with her father's financial statements. Asked if she had any role in them, she said, "None that I'm aware of." asked if she prepared, reviewed, approved them, or had anything to do with the methodology that was used in them. She repeatedly answered no, but we did get nothing from Ivanka though, because emails from Trump's daughter unveiled yesterday show her role in the scheme. Reuters reported that at the trial, she was shown a 2011 email in which she acknowledged that a requirement by lender Deutsche Bank that her father maintain a net worth of at least $3 billion was a problem, but encouraged company officials to approve it anyway. We wanted to get a great rate, and the only way to get proceeds slash term and principal where we want them is to guarantee the deal, she wrote to a Trump Organization lawyer. She was also shown a 2011 email she received from the federal government expressing concern about irregularities in Trump's financial statements as the company was proposing to redevelop the old post office, a federal property. Other evidence showed she profited personally from that deal. She again said she did not recall specifics. There were many emails, many conversations, she said. You know, and Jackson, I know you know this. I'll remind the audience at this point that this is a trial essentially for damages, right? They've already been found to have committed fraud. They've been found liable for fraud. And this is a trial determining what the response is going to be to that. You mentioned in the earlier story that Trump's legal team leaves something to be desired. His children's legal teams leave something to be desired, right? And this is what happens when you have alienated actual reputable attorneys who are good at their jobs, and now you have to pick from whoever is on Newsmax that is singing your praises, and whatever, you know, right wing attorneys you, let's be honest, why he picks some of them, he wants to have sex with them. And that's how you get arguments like this in court, because you can't get reputable attorneys to represent you when you have been shown time and time again to just be a total fraud.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always interesting. I mean, you know, I don't know. I have no idea how anything works. I'm only the person in the position to actually make things tick. I have the final say with stuff. But, you know, the company, though, it just runs itself. I don't know. Yesterday, I was a brilliant genius that you should listen to. Today, I don't know. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's always interesting when that happens. So apparently you're an idiot and we should never have trusted you because you don't understand how anything works. But yeah, you know, I think Alina Haba, from what I've seen other attorneys say, she has like no trial experience. Yeah. I mean, she came out a day or two ago at some point this week, and she was talking about Letitia James. And, you know, she was saying how I don't think she's that bright. But then she said something. What really got me was when she was like, because, you know, that statement Letitia James is saying numbers don't lie. Mm-hmm. Alina Haba was like, well, you're right. Numbers don't lie. And you had to drop out of the governor's election because you didn't have enough votes. Like, what does that have to do with anything? Like, they're just losing. Like, they're just flat out losing. And they can say all of that, but in the courtroom, like, they ain't saying none of that. Like, they're in the courtroom, they're just losing, like, mm-hmm. plain and simple. It's really something to see. You know, none of these people know how anything works, but, you know, that's how it goes.
Exactly. And it just reminds me that during his testimony, Don Jr. was asked, because he was put in charge of signing off on these, financial disclosure documents when Trump was running for president and was the president. And one of his defenses was, well, I didn't read the document. I just let the accountants put it together, which is an insane defense. Any attorney letting him say that, it should lose their license. Your Honor, I didn't read it.
And that's why he has who he has. And again, that's why I keep saying, like, this is such a huge indication onto what's actually going to happen in the general election. Trump can't win the election by himself. He can't. You feel me? So, like, if he's just going to go through bulldozing like this, and then everyone who's connected to him are people like Alina Haba, like, it's incredible to see. It really is amazing. Mm-hmm. Because all Donald Trump had to do, well, first and foremost, he doesn't need to be in any of these situations. Now, the civil case, that's decades and decades of fraud. Mm-hmm. But, like, the federal situations that he's in, he had a year and a half to give these documents back. The Stormy Daniels stuff, no one even cares about that. That's not what people are really focused on. You know, he's in the situation that if he would just shut his mouth, just be quiet and pay your lawyers. But again, like, that's who he is. It's amazing. I keep saying Joe Biden is running against himself and Donald Trump is running against himself in this election.
All right. Absolutely. Let's move on to this next story. Speaking of the election, because we had an election on Tuesday night, Republicans took some massive losses and they can't handle that. They are doing no self-reflection. And let's start with Rick Santorum.
You put very sexy things like abortion and marijuana on the ballot, and a lot of young people come out and vote. It was a secret sauce for disaster in Ohio. I don't know what they were thinking, but that's why I thank goodness that most of the states in this country don't allow you to put everything on the ballot, because pure democracies are not the way to run a country.
I don't know what's worse, him saying the word sexy, which did make me throw up a little bit in my mouth, or saying that direct democracy shouldn't happen, celebrating the limits on direct democracy in this country. I mean, just blatantly saying the quiet part out loud. But it's not just Rick Santorum. Republicans are melting down after they had a disastrous election on Tuesday night. So just to recap what happened on Tuesday, Ohio legalized weed as well as voting in favor of adding abortion access to their state constitution. They enshrined it in their state constitution. Democrat Andy Beshear won his second term in Kentucky, and Glenn Youngkin got very embarrassed when he lost both chambers of the state Congress in Virginia. Reminder, Democrats had control of the Senate in Virginia. It was projected that they would maintain control of it. It wasn't as projected that they would also gain the House of Delegates in their state Congress. So big wins for Democrats in Virginia. But instead of realizing the American electorate is mostly pro-choice, because I'll say this, even when we're looking at the races right in Kentucky, we're looking at the races in Virginia, abortion wasn't on the ballot as a ballot measure to enshrine it in their constitutions in the same way it was in Ohio. But Andy Beshear, as the governor in Kentucky, is standing in opposition to allowing the Republican controlled state Congress, the state legislator, from passing extremely regressive abortion bans. And in Virginia, it was solely the Democrats in control of the state Senate preventing those same types of laws from passing in that state. So it was on the ballot in all of these states, even if it wasn't as obvious in some of the other ones as it was in Ohio. But instead of recognizing that abortion rights drives people to the polls, Republicans say the fight isn't over to strip women of their rights. They're doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on it. Now, here's a statement from Ohio House Speaker Jason Stephen. He said, "I remain steadfastly committed to protecting life, and that commitment is unwavering. The legislature has multiple paths that we will explore to continue to protect innocent life. This is not the end of the conversation." Meanwhile, the blame game has started, one of Republicans' favorite games to play. Now, Daniel Cameron was the Republican who ran against Andy Beshear, and he was endorsed by Donald Trump. I know you know what I'm talking about, yes. Jackson, but after Daniel Cameron's defeat, Trump said, "Not me, not my fault," and pointed squarely at Mitch McConnell. Here's the post he made. It says, "Daniel Cameron lost because he couldn't alleviate the stench of Mitch McConnell. I told him early that's a big burden to overcome. McConnell and Romney are kryptonite for Republican candidates. I moved him up 25 points, but the McConnell relationship was, quote, too much to bear." Tate Reeves, on the other hand, surged to a win for governor in Mississippi after my involvement. Congratulations to Tate. That race was not close. I'm sorry. He was always going to win that race in Mississippi. Most are joining Vivek Ramaswamy and turning their ire to Ronna McDaniel. Vivek called her out directly at last night's debate. Take a look.
"I think there's something deeper going on in the Republican Party here, and I am upset about what happened last night. We've become a party of losers at the end of the day. It is a cancer in the Republican establishment. Let's speak the truth. I mean, since Ronna McDaniel took over as chairwoman of the RNC in 2017, we have lost 2018, 2020, 2022, no red wave that never came. We got trounced last night in 2023. And I think that we have to have accountability in our party. For that matter, Ron, if you want to come on stage tonight, you want to look the GOP voters in the eye and tell them you resign, I will turn over my, yield my time to you.
Which is funny because Vivek Ramaswamy is championing all the policies that the voters hate that drives them to the polls to vote against Republicans. But like I said, he wasn't the only person calling out Ronna McDaniel. Here's Charlie Kirk, who said, I know Vivek is running for POTUS, but he would make a great RNC chair. He's young. He understands data. He's as fed up with the party as the rest of us. He could raise a ton of cash by running scams off of failed Alzheimer's medication. He's innovative and has not alienated the base. Vivek for RNC chair. He also has no electoral experience. Not that apparently you need it to work in Republican politics, but he has no, has never run
a looking guy.
Right, that's it. Yeah. Charlie Kirk is like, the only people who can be the RNC chair are guys who I think are hot.
that's the standard. You know what I'm saying? Vivek is just so disingenuous because it's like, I'm going to put all of the blame on this one singular person. I'm not going to mention Donald Trump, who I can't remove my lips from his behind. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just, you know, reaches new levels of forehead Super Saiyan every time he gets on stage. You feel me? Like, I'm just going to ramble on and on about Vivek. But I mean, yeah, it's true. The Republican Party, we're watching it completely collapse, but it's decades in the making. One of their issues is they haven't changed their tune. They haven't changed their approach so much to the point that now it's like just so bare in your face. What do news anchors say? Well, no, we have to start winning elections so that Republicans can take our country back from who? From the blacks, from the browns, from the gays, from the trans people, from the immigrants, you know, all those people. Mm-hmm. They give a middle finger to everybody. And then when they lose, you know, instead of saying, maybe we ought to, you know, at least not take things away from people. Maybe we should start there. You know, Rick Santorum, who's, you know, a theocrat to my understanding, basically.
Yeah.
God doesn't want people to have a choice. You know, it's a good, you know, luckily for all of us, all the 50 states don't do direct ballot measures because, oh boy, if they did, people would have choice. And that's not what God wants. unfortunately, that's what we have to deal with. They're serious. They're not kidding. It's goofy and it's easy to laugh at them. But their solution to losing is to become more authoritarian, to lessen the democratic process. And that is really what all of Donald Trump's campaign is about.
Absolutely. And I'll just end by saying that I think what Tuesday showed us is that when these Republican state legislators pass these extremely restrictive abortion bans, that they don't represent the voters that they're supposed to be representing, right? Because when you actually, as the Supreme Court said, we need to give it back to the states, and you actually let the people decide on these issues, they overwhelmingly support protecting abortion. Even in deep red states, they support protecting abortion. So much so that right now, the Democratic Party is attempting to get abortion on the ballot in key swing states ahead of 2024 to drive out voters who are also likely to vote for Joe Biden. That is now their electoral strategy, is get abortion on the ballot in Florida, get abortion on the ballot in Arizona, get it on the ballot in New Mexico, so that we can turn out Democratic voters in those states. So abortion is popular, people. No matter how much the Republicans are able to dominate the airwaves and use their endless cash flow to tell you it's not, people want to protect abortion, even in these deep red states. And with that, we have to go to our next break, but stick around because we're going to be talking about blatant Islamophobia in the United States Congress coming up. All right, let's jump right into this next story about the censuring of Rashida Tlaib.
Trying to bully or censor me won't work because this movement for a ceasefire is much bigger than one person. It's growing every single day. There are millions of people across our country who oppose Netanyahu's extremism and are done watching our government support collective punishment. Like me, Mr. Chair, they don't believe the answer to war crimes is more war crimes. The refusal of Congress and the administration to acknowledge Palestinian lives is chipping away at my soul.
The cowardly and pathetic House of Representatives voted late Tuesday to censure Democratic Representative Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, who is, I'll remind you, the only Palestinian American in Congress. The vote was 234 to 188. And if you did some quick math there, you'll realize that that means more than 20 Democrats joined Republicans on Tuesday night to censure a member of their own party. After an effort to shelve the measure failed earlier in the day. Now, four Republicans did not vote to censure Rashida Tlaib. Some of the Democrats who did vote to censure her include Dan Goldman, Richie Torres, of course, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and Chris Pappas, and there was several others. Now, on the other side, Ken Buck, Thomas Massey, John Duarte, and Tom McClintock voted against the censure. So a little more from the Associated Press. While the censure of a lawmaker carries no practical effect, it amounts to severe reproach from colleagues, as lawmakers who are censured are usually asked to stand in the well of the House as the censure resolution against them is read aloud. But the resolution against Tlaib did not call for the public admonishment. Now, just as a reminder of why they voted to censure her, Tlaib, the only Palestinian American member of Congress, posted a video of Michigan protesters chanting "From this river to the sea," part of a chant condemned by Jewish groups and the ADL as anti-Semitic. And I've criticized the ADL many times for this. The ADL classifies anti-Zionist statements as the same, in the same vein that they classify anti-Semitic statements. So someone actually committing a hate crime against a Jewish person is classified the same as someone saying that they don't believe that Israel has a right to self-defense. Absolutely patently absurd. Now, the whole slogan calls for Palestine to be free across all of the territory that now encompasses, oh my God, I cannot speak today, encompasses Israel. Israelis and their supporters in Congress and beyond view it as a call for Israel's destruction. And in some cases, they say that it is a call for the eradication of all Jews for the region, which is absurd considering there are Palestinian Jewish people. But in a response to the backlash, Rashida Tlaib clarified here, "From the river to the sea is an aspirational call for freedom, human rights, and peaceful coexistence, not death, destruction, or hate. My work and advocacy is always centered in justice and dignity for all people, no matter faith or ethnicity." Now, many Democrats and some Republicans who opposed censuring Tlaib cited free speech and warned of the precedent it would set. Here is Jamie Raskin doing just that.
America must stand tall for the Constitution of the United States, and this resolution is about one thing and one thing only, the punishment of speech. So we have the chance to show the world what the American Constitution means and how we hold fast to our core principles, even when we're drawn away from them by our passions and our righteous anger. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. In the very heart of it is our First Amendment, which protects every citizen's freedom of speech and says Congress shall make no law abridging it.
Now, despite facing censure, Tlaib wrapped up her speech in defense of herself to continue her plea for a ceasefire. Take a look.
71% of Michigan Democrats support a ceasefire. So you can try to censure me, but you can't silence their voices. I urge my colleagues to join with the majority of Americans and support a ceasefire now to save as many lives as possible. President Biden must listen to and represent all of us, not just some of us. I urge the president to have the courage to call for a ceasefire and the end of killings. Thank you, and I yield.
Rashida Tlaib is hands down the bravest member of Congress. She's been standing strong on this issue despite abhorrent racism being directed at her. She was censured. But the Republican member of Congress who said, we are going to turn Gaza into a parking lot, wipe it off the map. No censure. Every member of the Republican Party who's gone on the news and said that endorsed genocide of Palestinians, no censure, no punishment. The party welcomes that. The party loves that. No condemnation from the pro-Israel members of the Democratic Party either. It is absolutely despicable, and you can't call it anything other than racism. Targeting the only Palestinian American in Congress and censuring her for calling for the freedom of her people, standing up against a genocide. And she's been censured. Members of I think the second censure in the history of our legislature was against a member of the House who called for an end to slavery. I think that draws a stark reality of what the institution has been created and used to protect in the past and is still being used to protect now. Jackson, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that, you know, at the end of the day, what people have to do is get more involved in the political process. And honestly, it's really that simple. Progressives have a very good opportunity, especially now. We're looking at a lot of people within the establishment just literally being, you know, in their 80s. You know what I'm saying? Like Dianne Feinstein passed away. And many people won't necessarily die while they're serving, but they're going to be retiring. More and more of an opportunity for us to capitalize on these types of issues to say, this is why we need more progressives in office. Find our own candidates, fund our own candidates, because otherwise, the influence that is Israel money and Israeli lobby money has it's not going to change. It's not going to go anywhere. We have to literally replace people who are in these elected positions. And it's not just within the federal government. It's getting involved in our backyards and in our communities and state elections and local elections, and forcing a change, being leaders in our own right, being brave like Rashida is, you know, taking the stand to even, you know, take these types of losses that she's being forced to take out of her will. But we have to keep the fight alive. But I think that, again, at the end of the day, this is an opportunity for us to see what we need to do and to respond accordingly. We need more progressives in office. So let's get them in office.
Absolutely. And you mentioned like the power of the AIPAC lobby, and you're not saying these fights are going to be easy, right? And I don't think anybody in the audience should take that away as the message, because these fights are difficult. Why is Nita Turner not in Congress right now? Because of AIPAC money flooding the special election in favor of Chantel Brown. I mean, they don't just donate, right? They donate, as I mentioned earlier, across the aisle to Republican candidates and to right-wing Democratic candidates in order to thwart people who are sympathetic to the Palestinian cause from gaining power. So these battles are going to be difficult, but they are worth fighting. And we're seeing right now, 80% of Democratic voters polled, 80% support a ceasefire. And yet, there's only a handful of Democrats willing to call for a ceasefire in Congress. And that is because of money and politics. It's something we talk a lot about here on the network. But I'm sorry, Richie Torres is not just independently coming to the conclusion that he needs to be the most pro-Israel person in the House of Representatives, okay? That's not just something he randomly stumbled upon or feels passionate about. He is severely well-funded by AIPAC. And that's why he's on Twitter every day yelling at college activists and defending Israel and defending the genocide happening right now in Gaza. Because of the money. It's because of the money. I mean, of course, not every single Democratic member who voted to censure Rashida Tlaib gets AIPAC funding, but almost all of them do. So you can't remove that element. And Jackson, I'll just let you get the last word in on this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't like to hear that we need to get more involved, but my involvement in the political space will to do my best to put people within my network as I continue to grow in positions of power so that we can make a change. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we just ask him, you know. So in my opinion, I think that it's our job to believe that we can make a change and do our best. And for me, as long as I'm in this kind of position and I continue to carry out my plans to just get more involved in communities, then I'm going to continue to believe that I personally can make a difference. So
awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And with that, that's all the time we have for the first hour. Stick around, hold on to your butts, because we'll be back with the aftermath after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.